Hello and welcome to the quarterly Keir Marbach podcast. As always, I'm your host, Zach Greiner, and joining us today is Keir Marbach's Chief Investment Officer, Mark Foster. Always glad to have you, Mark.
Good to be here.
We will stick to our usual format for today's show. Start with Mark giving us his update on the market as leadoff. We'll also do an additional segment with Mark that we've not done in the past. Then I will spend some time discussing market indexes, focusing on each of the most common indexes and really what they consist of and what they reflect in terms of the overall market. So to dive right in to Mark's update, my first question is, the first quarter wasn't a great start for the year as we discussed last quarter. But having said that, second quarter was downright awful. Any encouraging thoughts I can hope you can share, Mark?
Yes, the first half of this year represents the fifth worst start in the history of the stock market, and you have to go back 50 years to find a worse first 6 months. So clearly a painful period. To make matters worse, it was also the worst start for bonds as well, so there really was no place to hide. Additionally, what makes this period unique is that fundamentals of companies have actually been pretty good. Earnings growth in the first quarter was a plus 8%. Historically, stock prices follow earnings direction 95% of the time. This has all been valuation declines, not earnings declines. Clearly, the market is anticipating a tougher road ahead, and it's not an unreasonable expectation. The worst inflation in decades is causing the Federal Reserve to belatedly tighten and raise interest rates. This lowers valuations and slows the economy. Slower economic growth hurts earnings, which impacts stock prices. The Fed's goal is a soft landing, i.e. slowing the economy without crashing it and hoping inflation subsides. That's a tough job to achieve, and their track record hasn't been great. Additionally, in past cycles, they were raising rates into a growing economy. This time, they are raising rates in a flattish economy, so the risks are greater. First quarter GDP was negative due mostly to inventory adjustments and imports. Second quarter GDP won't be released until July 28th, but I think there's a strong likelihood that number is negative as well due to many of the same issues as the first quarter. But employment is still growing, and we aren't seeing some of the things you usually see in a recession. Company management teams are generally optimistic, and balance sheets are in great shape for most companies. There have certainly been some frothy sectors of the market like software, biotech, Bitcoin, and others, but those have seen significant corrections, so some of these excesses are getting the necessary adjustments. I think it's really hard to know at this point. But recall the last major recession was 2008, and it was characterized by a very weak banking system that almost shut down credit availability. That's clearly not the case this time, as banks are in great shape, as is most of corporate America.
You know, to piggyback off that, as we all saw, and has been the focus of news coverage, the most recent inflation number released recently wasn't pretty and is still rising from past quarters. Any additional thoughts there?
Yeah, the inflation number was 9.1, and that's pretty high. It was up in most categories, but the key drivers continue to be food, energy, and rents. In simple terms, we forced the economy to shut down while simultaneously injecting an unprecedented amount of fiscal and monetary stimulus. This just has to work through the system now, and we have to stop doing it. The Fed seems to have caught on and has dramatically slowed money supply growth. I'm not sure Congress has, but it's usually harder to get things passed as an election approaches. Oil prices have come down, which should help next month's numbers, and many commodity prices have traded down from their highs, so there are some hopeful signs.
Good to hear. So what should Keir Marbach investors be doing or thinking about at this point in the market?
Well, we're prepared to survive any environment like this. The companies we own are high quality and financially durable to the point that a weak economy won't change that. Most of these companies have strong pricing power that should hold up well in an inflationary environment. And we have avoided the speculative type of investments that have already lost investors significant sums of money. We've spent a fair amount of time on risk controls over the past few years. Examples would be trimming positions if they got too big, focusing on companies with solid balance sheets, profitable businesses that are self-financing, solid management teams that are shareholder-oriented. Our holdings have larger market capitalizations than what we have owned historically, which should help reduce volatility as well. All of this positions us for any environment. And as a reminder, corrections are part of the process. There have been many of them in the past, and there will be many of them in the future. Every historical correction has recovered. It feels painful in the middle of it, but everyone has recovered.
Thanks for the update, Mark. All right, we're going to try something new. Historically, we haven't spent a lot of time on individual stocks, but today we wanted to change that and discuss a couple of our larger holdings. Going forward, each quarter, we will highlight holdings that are perhaps not as well known to the average investor or where there are significant corporate events taking place. One such name we'll start off with is Canadian Pacific. I am sure most of our investors have not heard that they are in the process of merging with Kansas City Southern Railway, a deal that includes the fifth and sixth largest railroad companies in North America. Mark, got any thoughts on Canadian Pacific?
Yeah, so Canadian Pacific is one of two major railroads in Canada. Its tracks run from Vancouver in the west to Montreal and Albany, New York in the east. It drops down to Chicago and Kansas City in the Midwest. The primary products it moves are automotive, energy, coal, fertilizer, grain, and forest products. And it has one of the best management teams of all the North American rails. The business is a great inflation hedge as they have strong pricing power. Rail is very cost effective versus trucking or air freight. The big change that's happening is the potential merger with Kansas City Southern. KSU is the fifth largest U.S. railroad. It starts in Kansas City and St. Louis, runs south to Houston, Port Arthur, New Orleans, and eventually into Mexico City. It's a great fit with the existing CP footprint and has lots of synergies and cost savings. Approval should come by year end, and it will be a great addition to the CP story. There have been very few mergers in the rail industry, so this is a big deal for Canadian Pacific if approved.
Interesting insight. To focus on another company, will you take some time to discuss Dollar Tree? I think everyone has seen Dollar Tree stores in town and are familiar with the concept. What's the significant change happening here to make them investment worthy?
Well, at Dollar Tree, there are two businesses. The Dollar Tree side, where everything sells for a dollar. Well, now it's $1.25 mm-hmm. with inflation. They recently changed that. And the Family Dollar business, which was bought by Dollar Tree a number of years back. Family Dollar has struggled to generate the upside that investors thought was possible when it was originally purchased. One of the things that can be a helpful catalyst to companies is a new CEO or management changes. Hedge fund Mantle Ridge, back in late 2021, acquired a roughly 10% stake in Dollar Tree and pushed for some changes. Mantle Ridge is working with Rick Dreiling, who's the former CEO of competitor Dollar General, and is pushing to help Family Dollar live up to its potential and generate metrics similar to Dollar General. Earlier this month, there were additional management changes with the CFO stepping down, as well as four other top executives. We're excited about the changes happening and think if this new management team is successful, it should bode very well for shareholders.
Thanks for the insights, Mark. Not only on the market overall, but I really enjoyed you spending some time focusing on holdings specific to the Kira Marbach strategy. I think it's a nice way to peek into the kitchen to see how the secret sauce is being made. I will look forward to next quarter's update and hope the update is a little more positive as excess money supply works its way through the system and we get a little more clarity on where inflation is. Thanks again, Mark. All right, to switch gears a little bit, one of the most common questions we get from our clients is simply, how is the market doing? And it sounds like a pretty simple question with a pretty simple answer. The market is up or down X%. But what people don't realize is most often when we are referencing the market up or down, we're actually referring to a specific index that is a representation of the overall market, like the Dow Jones Industrial Average or the S&P 500 or even the Russell 2000, just to name a few. None of those indexes encompass the entire 3,687-ish publicly traded companies in the U.S., but are just a set number of companies with the purpose of giving a good representation of the overall performance of the stock market, hence the purpose of an index. I wanted to spend some time today covering the two most common reference stock indexes, the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the S&P 500, as well as highlight other often covered indexes that are a little less known. The main focus when looking at an index for me is one, how they weight each company in the index, and two, what and how many companies comprise the index. To start, the oldest of the major indexes we will discuss today is the Dow Jones Industrial Average, more commonly known as the Dow. The Dow consists of 30 large blue-chip U.S.-based companies, oftentimes market leaders in their respective arena. The index uses price weighting to determine the impact of each company it has on the index. So what is price weighting? Instead of each company making up 1/30th of the index, each company's share price determines their weighting. The higher the share price, the higher the weight. The lower the share price, you guessed it, the lower the weighting. To me, price weighting is not an effective way of determining a company's size, since the share price alone has no direct correlation to a company's overall size or performance, nor is share price alone a good way to compare companies to each other. Currently, United Health is the highest weighted company in the Dow at about 10.93% of the overall index, with a share price right around $500 as of recording. To reflect why price weighting is flawed, we can look at a recent stock split example of Apple. Before the split, Apple was the largest company weighted in the Dow with a share price floating around $500. But after their recent 4-to-1 split, the share price dropped to $150-ish a share, causing it to slip to 14th overall. So really, they got knocked down from non-business related activities, but simply a change in share price from a split. To me, that's not the most logical method to determine a company's size. So looking at the Dow, I think there are some benefits and some downsides when we reflect the Dow index as the overall market. Some of the things I think are upsides: it is the oldest of the major indexes. So if we want to compare history to today, the Dow does a good job of having a long track record of data. The index is also compromised of the kind of the most notable and recognizable companies in the U.S., so there's a lot of familiarity with the companies inside the index. And it does reflect the health of some of the largest U.S. companies, which can be a good correlation to the health of the overall U.S. economic activity. And the last reason there's a benefit is it is widely referenced in news coverage. Not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it is widely referenced in news coverage. So what are the downsides of the Dow? To me, the most apparent one is using price weighting method of 30 companies. It's inexact science on how to determine the size of a company. And only 30 companies really limits the representation of the overall publicly traded companies, as well as there's some sectors that get left out. The Dow really focuses heavily on industrials. The next index we will highlight is probably now the most commonly used index taking over for the Dow, and that's the S&P 500. The S&P 500 is a market cap weighted index of the largest 500 U.S.-based publicly traded companies. Market cap weighting is different than price weighting in that it uses a company's market capitalization to determine their size and therefore their weighting in the index. Market capitalization of a company is simply the number of shares outstanding times the share price. One way to think of it is, how much would it cost for me to purchase an entire company, i.e. buy all of their shares? This is just one method of determining a company size. Currently, Apple is the highest weighted company in the S&P 500 with a market cap of about $2.4 trillion, making up roughly 7% of the overall index. If we go back to the United Healthcare example in the Dow, United Healthcare and the S&P 500 has a weighting of about 1.47%, which is good for about 8th overall in the S&P 500. If you remember in the Dow, I think we said it was close to 11% weighting. One more example for comparison, locally, Cummins has a market cap of about $27.45 billion, which makes up a 0.089% weighting in the index of the S&P 500, ranking them about 231st overall. So what are some of the upsides and downsides to the S&P 500? I think the upsides are, first, it is an established long-term track record index, so it does give a very good example of how the market has performed historically. It also has a strong representation of large U.S.-based companies, obviously because there's 500 of them in there. And because there's 500, it does cover all of the sectors inside the stock market. So I think strong representation is a good pro. And lastly, when we think of kind of weighting, I think market cap weighting is a much more effective way to rank and weight company size versus price weighting. There are some limitations on the S&P 500. The first limitation to me is it is top weighted due to some of the mega cap large companies that we have out there. About the top 10 companies make up about 30% of the overall market index. So, you know, 500 companies out there, 10 of them account for a third of the performance. So a little bit top heavy. It is only large cap focused, so you don't get any mid or small cap companies involved. And the last kind of point I'll talk about is market cap is not the only way to determine a company size. And the example I'll use is Tesla. Tesla in the S&P 500 is the sixth largest company based on their market cap. And regardless of what you think of Tesla, it probably doesn't have the sixth most influence of publicly traded companies in the U.S. So market cap does have some limitations when you're doing some weighting. So when do we use the Dow versus the S&P 500? And what other indexes do we look at? For me, I think the Dow Jones is a good reflection of large blue chip established companies, and mainly in the industrial and manufacturing sectors, because there's minimal weight in technology, utilities, or transportation. So I use the Dow to kind of determine how larger industrial corporations are doing overall. I think the S&P 500 does a better job representing the overall U.S. stock market. So oftentimes when we're asked, how is the market doing? The S&P 500 is what we're referencing. Some other indexes to think about. The first one is the Russell 2000. The Russell 2000 is a cap weighting of the smaller 2000 U.S.-based companies. Kind of think mid and small cap. I highlight this because Keir Marbach uses the Russell 2000 as our benchmark since it's in line with our strategy of a multi-cap stock strategy. To reflect the health of mid and smaller U.S. companies, the Russell 2000 focuses on healthcare, financials, and industrials. So a lot of those older school industries. Another index is the NASDAQ. The NASDAQ is a market cap weight of all of the stocks listed in the NASDAQ. Do keep in mind that the NASDAQ does not just list U.S.-based companies, but companies all over the world. The NASDAQ's about half of the NASDAQ's weighting is technology of the index. So it's a very tech-heavy index. We'll use the QQQ or the NASDAQ as a good example of how tech stocks are doing. The last index I'll reference is the Wilshire 5000. The Wilshire 5000 is a market cap weighting of all U.S. stocks. That represents all 3,600 plus stocks I just referenced earlier. The limitation and why we never use the Wilshire 5000 is just strictly the weighting. A mega cap weighting of a market cap stock is going to be much heavier than some of the small caps. So the representation is still skewed towards the larger companies. But it's still a good index to know. There are countless more indexes we can discuss, but these are the most common for U.S. investors. I do hope this helps clarify all of the different indexes we reference when asked the simple, how is the market doing question. I personally believe that the media likes to cover the Dow Jones the most because of their ability to sensationally say the market is up or down X hundred of points, and that sounds very significant. If we all knew that it was in reference to an imperfect weighting method for only 30 U.S. companies, I don't think we'd put as much value in that news coverage as maybe the S&P 500 or the Russell 2000. The only other thought I wanted to share on indexes is that one of the reasons they have been in so much focus is the ability to use ETFs to invest in entire stock indexes. That may be another discussion topic for a podcast down the road. I hope you all enjoyed listening and look forward to catching up with everyone next quarter. Thanks again.